Martin, people say to me. People say to me, Martin. They say it in the street. They say it in the shopping centers, in the stores, in the markets, in the public places, on the beach. They say, Martin, tell us the significance of the term second when speaking of the second death. And I have to hold them back. I have to say, look, I cannot answer you all at once. I'm going to make a show about this. I'll direct you to the show here. Here's my business card, ZenderOnRevelation.com, and pay attention. And eventually I will get to this topic. And here I am finally, ladies and gentlemen, all you out there who have been inundating me with requests and passionately asking me to explain this to you about why the second death, Martin? What is the difference between the first death and the second death? Well, I did already talk about this a little bit, did I not? Yes? Well, now I promised you more details, and I'm going to deliver more details. Now, people usually think that the second death has to differ really radically from the first death. And I don't know why people think this. It's just, it doesn't follow. It's not logical. In fact, you could say, and this is so true, many believers, so-called believers today, don't even believe that there's any such thing as death at all. So people believe in the immortality of the soul. So what difference does it make if there's a first death, second death, third death, fourth death? If you don't even believe in death at all, then these are just useless terms. So let's begin by believing that death is the absence of life. Shall we? Okay. So the minute we find out that death, again, is the definition of the lake of fire, this is the lake of fire, the second death, that should compel us to admit that we must retain the ordinary meaning of death here, assuming you even know the ordinary meaning of death. It's the absence of life. Now, there's many places, I love this, in Scripture where the word second is used, and it means... It's different, yes, in that it's the second occurrence of a thing, but it does not change the inherent definition, the meaning of the thing. This is just illogical. Watch this. In Genesis, there's a second day, right? Genesis 1:8. There was a day one, and then the second day came. How was it different than the first day? It was another one. It was a different one. There's today, and there's yesterday. Does that mean that a day now, we have to redefine the word day? We have to redefine what a day is? It's the period of time between the sunrise and the sunset? Just because we have today. Ooh, it's today. What about yesterday? Does that change the essential meaning of day? Of course, it's ridiculous. There's a second river in Genesis. Genesis 2:13. We know there were four rivers. God is describing the second river. What's a river? What does the river become when it is called a second river? It's still a river. It's still a river. The first couple had a second son. No, this is actually Genesis 30. Well, that's true. Adam and Eve had a second son, Abel. They had Cain and Abel. But he's not called second. So, we can see, Martin, that a son is a son is a son, but when you have the word second attached to it, then there must be a difference. And now we have to look at a different meaning of son. So I'm going to take you to a verse in Scripture where the word second is used, and that's Rachel's maid Bilhah produced for Rachel a second son. He's a second son. It just means that he came next in the birth order. That's all. There's a second month on the Hebrew calendar, 2 Chronicles 32, 30, verse 2. I bring this up because the word second is used before the noun month. Does this change the nature of a month? Do we have to look for a different definition of month just because we've used the qualifier second month? I dare say we do not. This seems so simple, and yet I feel to cover my bases here, and I'm finishing something today, because tomorrow I'm going to go into a letter that a man wrote me about the second death. And by this letter and my response to it was quite detailed. His letter was quite detailed, and my response was in turn quite detailed. And by this means, I will show you that many of the arguments concerning the second death are emotional arguments. People don't care about laws of language. They don't care about the law of the metaphor. They don't care about context, that the lake of fire, or that fire and sulfur kill people. They don't care, this what I'm telling you, that the term second doesn't change the nature of a thing just because it comes next in a certain order. They don't care. They just care that they're kids or their mother or their father is at the great white throne. That's they can't understand why God would be so mean as to cast people into the lake of fire when he just raised them from the dead. And so their heart bleeds, and this totally obliterates for them the tears in their eyes. And I'm not unsympathetic to tears, but I'm just saying, the tears in their eyes obliterate, keep them from being able to see logic. But interesting enough, I'm going to finish here, but interesting enough, I'm sort of talking about tomorrow's show. Interesting enough, when I tell them, but this is weird, they have no problem that their loved ones or their kids or their mother or their father are going to the first death. I mean, they have a problem with it. We all have a problem with death, but the first death seems reasonable. Okay, the first death. But the first death is not, this is the problem, the first death is not judicial at all. It's not judicial. God doesn't decide that you will go to the first death. He doesn't base it on any criteria. The first, on any criteria such as works, such as do you believe in Jesus? Did you do good works? No, it's simply a natural result of being an Adam. As an Adam, all are dying. Simple. So death comes to the innocent child as well as the hardened criminal. That's the difference between the first death and the second death. You want a difference? The difference is not in that death is the absence of life. That stays the same. The difference is the second death is judicial, and it comes from the hand of God. It comes from a pronouncement of God, an announcement. It comes from consulting a book. And so that's what makes it all, that people get whacked out over it, because it's different than the first death. Yes, I'm not saying it's different than the first death. Rachel's second son was different than her first son. The second river was different than the first river. It took a little different meandering course, all right? The first day of Genesis was different than the second day. God created different things on the second day. The second month was different in Israel. So, yes, there are differences here. But again, these things are irrelevant to the emotional person. But, when I tell them that, okay, your loved ones, by virtue of their good acts, they're going to go on to the new earth, they feel a little better, and they dry their tears, and now they're able to think logically. And the same facts I brought them before now bear weight, which is interesting. The facts were just as weighty before. They were just as true, just as real, but now people couldn't see them. But people couldn't see them because they were emotional, because they had their loved ones in view, loved ones in mind. You're going to see this tomorrow and the next day. Might take me a few days to get through this letter. But then suddenly when I gave them an outlet, when I said, well, wait a minute. There's going to be a righteous judgment. It's going to be happy time for the doer of good works. Not many people are going to the lake of fire, which is the second death. And so your loved one will be enjoying life on the fifth earth during the fifth eon in the New Jerusalem, eating that delicious fruit, sucking the juice, the nectar from those wonderful leaves, and they will be being healed constantly. Everything's going to be great. The weather's going to be perfect. God himself's going to dwell with humanity. Then they're happy. I guess maybe your facts are right after all, Martin. Well, no, my facts were right the whole time. All right, you just couldn't see them because you had an emotional investment. And you were taking that to the text and using it to make the text say something you wanted it to say. And we all do that a little bit, but we have to. God is better than your imagination. If you don't think it's fail, I will tell you that God is more fail than you can ever be. No fail. No, listen, God is more fail than you will ever be, even with your own children. So, we have to understand that there are essential similarities between the first and second death, but they definitely differ in scope and in intention. What do I mean by that? Because with few exceptions, I mean accepting the body of Christ, everyone enters the first death as an animal or dying. And most people, I mean like 99.9999% of the people who ever came into the world will die the first death. It's a natural law, again, and it came from Adam. It affects saints and sinners. Well, saints are still sinners, aren't they? Yes, so let's not put it that way. It affects believers and unbelievers, the first death does. The Apostle Paul is dead, and Adolf Hitler is dead. But the second death is due to a judicial act of God, and no believer will ever have a part in it. Another great distinction. And we're often tempted, when we are tempted to view the first death, for instance, of a sinner as a judicial infliction, that causes all sorts of problems. It's not a penalty. When I say a judicial affliction, I mean a penalty. It's like a punishment. It's like we're punishing you. The first death, we're punishing you. What did I do? I feel like the kid coming in, you know, to the living room and you're grounded. What did I do? What did I do? We didn't do anything. We're dying because of our inheritance of death from Adam. We suffer. This is important. We suffer for what we do, but we die for who we are. Yes, sinning produces suffering. You reap what you sow. Adam sinned and he offended God. It was a sin and an offense. An offense touched God's feelings. The sin broke God's law. The sin produced for Adam suffering. God said to Adam, because of what you did, you know, you shall sweat. By the sweat of your brow, you will bring up your daily sustenance. And yet, because of what Adam offended God's feelings, because of what Adam became, he became an enemy of God. It's different. You break a law, that's one thing. He became an enemy of God. Then death. And it's death that passed through into all humanity. Not sin. Sin does not pass through to us. Sin is not genetically transmitted. It's death, my friends, that is genetically transmitted to us. And we sin because we're dying. Romans 5:12. Therefore, death passed through into all humanity, upon whom all sinned. Awkward phrasing there in Romans 5:12. We can look at it some other time. I dealt with it in the Revelation series exhaustively. I mean, the Romans series, my print series, and my newsletter, the ZWTF. I need you to go to my website, martinzenner.com. I want you to go to ZWTF Archives. I'm in a series on the book of Romans. If you're getting tired of Revelation, I don't know how you could be. This is exciting to me. This is very exciting. We have the second death going on here. We have a giant resurrection at the great white throne. A book is open. How dramatic can we get here? But if it's too much for you and you want the calming, soothing benefits of how Christ thinks of you, go to my print series on Romans, the ZWTF, for those of you who don't know about it. So, the first death can be I'm going to quote A. Enoch here. The first death can be no more to the sinner than the prison which holds him for trial. He cannot be judged before his case has been tried. Oh, this is good. That makes sense. That makes sense because, look, today's judicial system is terribly unfair, usually. I mean, it's just cruel. People are held for a long period of time before their case even comes up. Right? And you sit in jail for a year or 2 years before you even go to trial. This is a terrible evil, terrible evil. But God uses the first death. He uses it to keep the time from affecting people. It keeps them from suffering or waiting, because no one's waiting in death. Your loved ones who have died, they're not waiting to be judged. And that death itself is not a judgment. So they're being held. It's a holding place. Perfect. Watch. It's a holding place. Death is placeholder. It's like, okay, we're gonna put this life on hold. You lived your life, it's done, signed, sealed, and delivered. Now lights out, you're gonna go to sleep, and when you wake up, now we're going to dust off the record of your life, we're gonna bring it forth, and now you're gonna be judged. Really, it's great, it's merciful. You're not being held interminably. All right, so here's a similarity between the first death and the second death, even though the second death is judicial, because some people aren't written in the book of life. It's still a mercy because it's a holding place. It's a placeholder. It's God saying, or not yet ready to vivify you, because it just doesn't seem right to me. And God is righteous and God is fair. So we would say, how come we're getting the same treatment as this hardened criminal? We're eventually going to get the same treatment at the consummation when death is abolished. Everyone eventually will live forever with God. But God does distinguish between those who do righteous acts, those who do bad acts, because it's human nature to think that, you know, hey, aren't these people going to come to a realization of the truth like I did? And they are, through trial, through becoming aware of their deeds. But all this happens, again, while people are alive. And so, we know that good people go to the first death. It happens. Well, people in general, some people will go to the second death, but sticking now strictly with the merciful part of it, it's all merciful, but the part that I want to leave you with now is that this is a mercy in that it keeps the fifth eon from the apprehensions of those who are simply not meant to live during it. Imagine if the fifth eon's 10,000 years long and there are people, they're just not allowed to go onto the fifth eon. You're not going to be vivified until the consummation. So here, we're going to put you in a holding cell for 10,000 years. No, the second death is there. Like the first death, it is a means of holding over the creature until God's time arrives for vivification. Quoting from A. Enoch, the first death envelops the sinner in oblivion so that so far as his consciousness is concerned, he's ushered into judgment immediately after dying. Beautiful. That's what it seems like. That's the mercy of death. Death is still an enemy, but it's a mercy in this way, in that in your consciousness, as far as your consciousness is concerned, you die and then immediately you rise to the great white throne. Wow, I died and then the judgment is instantaneous. No, sorry, bud. You've been dead for 3,000 years. What? Unbelievable. You can't believe it, because it could be 3,000 years or 3 seconds. It doesn't matter. That's the beauty of death. I forget that. It's not the beauty of death. I retract that statement. Can we scrub that from the record? Can we? No, it's on the record. I just have to continue to apologize for it at the end of the show. Okay. There is no such thing as the beauty of death. Death is an enemy. It's ugly. It's the lack of life. It keeps people from God. People who are dead are not with God. They're not with you. They're not with anyone. They're in oblivion. But God is able to raise them from the dead. He holds on to the spirit, which is the hard drive. There's no consciousness there. The spirit is the hard drive of the person, and he will reunite that hard drive with a body, and the result will be a soul. And they're going to have soul again at that point, and they will come forth. But in the meantime, death is an enemy as far as being with God is concerned, but it can be said to be a blessing in that there's no consciousness of pain, there's no consciousness of grief, of longing, of angst. All goes away like a beautiful long winter's night sleep. When you lay down all your burdens, all your cares, remove your clothing, get under those silky sheets or that down comforter, and the next thing you know, it's morning. In God's great plan of the eons, the next thing you know, it's going to be morning. Morning is broken, and morning is good.